Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we speak with local singer, songwriter, and performer Rebecca Ungerman, who's been a fixture in the Tulsa music scene and in local music productions for years. But over the past year, Rebecca says she's rededicated herself to music over other interests and has put together a series of cabaret shows, reviews, and a new musical, The Unwitting Wife, which she's workshopped as a stage reading this past summer at Summer Stage. She has since revised the show, and it will see its first stage production at the Tiberias International Theater Festival in Israel. Tiberias is Tulsa's sister city in Israel. Additional performances are scheduled in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. The Unwitting Wife is a story of love and lifelong friendship between three women, one gay, one bisexual, and one straight. Here's the opening of the show from their soundtrack recording.
Stealing smokes from your daddy's pack, hoping that he didn't notice when he got back.
What about the loans you took from your mother's purse?
Hey, we've all done worse. What about Halloween 2 years ago?
The library had to get a new front door.
Ooh, nobody knew.
Ooh, they're just so cool.
The things you never learn in school.
That's an excerpt from The Unwitting Wife, which will receive its premiere Thursday in Israel. Rebecca Ungerman joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Rebecca Ungerman, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich, for having me here.
Tell us about this piece, The Unwitting Wife. 6 months ago, where was this piece?
Nowhere. Honestly, it was kind of in my vault because just 6 months ago, at the end of May, Cindy Vetter, house manager at the Tulsa PAC, tapped me on the shoulder and said there was a one-night dropout in Summer Stage. Would I like it? And I had two shows going up, and I thought, well, what's three? I already have two. Sure, why not? And all I heard was the original piece was supposed to be original. And so I took my catalog of recorded music that dated back to 87 and stared at it for a while. My friend Lisa Cole stared at it with me and came up with a really cool idea for a story of three women and friendship and love and struggle with sexual identity and all kinds of very cool stuff. And from that idea, and apparently I had been telling this story since 87, kind of. I've come to learn over the process of the writing, looking back, I really have been.
You've been working on this thing for 20 years.
I have, in a really weird way, I have, and it's fabulous. And, you know, some people have the perception that I jam these shows into, or these songs into a show, but I also wrote six songs for the production, and we've rewritten and rearranged almost everything with the old stuff. Not completely, but it's so fun to take my material and adapt it to this theatrical work.
Now, we've known you as a performer in the community for many, many years, but all of a sudden, it's just in the last couple of years, we're starting to see you put together real thematic shows and reviews and making a more theatrical move as opposed to, you know, club performer and cabaret performer, which we're used to seeing you in that role. What's been going on?
Well, really what
happened... I mean, has this been the goal all along?
I wasn't quite sure what the goal was. I had two goals really for the last 10 to 15 years, and I wasn't sure if I was going to end up a full-time entertainer or a full-time youth director and kind of lay rabbi. I've been doing this whole thing with a national youth group, the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization, and that's been 50% of my life. Oddly enough, I thought that was the road to security financially and all that, and at the end of the day, a year ago, this last August, I retired from the youth group, and I focused for the very first time 100% on entertainment, and it's working out.
Now, I was assume as with the youth sort of thing, you're doing a lot of theatrical stuff with the kids.
Always, always. And that's – honestly, it's made me a better director than anything else, I think.
Because you can direct kids. You can direct
– Exactly. I have worked with thousands of teenagers from all over the world. – So working on the Tulsa Gridiron, which is coming up in January, I started out as a writer and a singer, and I took over as director and producer about – this will be my sixth or seventh year this year. And last year it occurred to me with this cast of 25 people, very different people of all ages and situations and everything, I thought, I've been training for this all my life.
Well, we should mention that for people who don't know that you've been doing like these national youth camps where Absolutely. It's like, so you're doing theatrical things, the typical summer.
People think I'm on the road every summer, and I'm a rabbi at these leadership programs with about 100 kids, and I do about 6 of them every summer, and I've done that every summer for about a decade up until this last summer when I did 3 shows because I had to fill that gap, right? I also am befriending all these wonderful young people, musicians. It's so nice. It's such an honor to be what my faith calls a light unto the nations, which just means be a good role model. And by telling this story, The Unwitting Wife just happens to be an LGBT-themed story. It's a 1950s musical, right? It's anybody who knows me knows that I just love a great show. And that's what's in my heart. But it's the lesbian musical you can take your grandmother to, I hope.
So The Unwitting Wife, 3 friends. Tell us a little bit about the story of the piece.
It's so great. I lived this piece probably with my friends Connie Hall and Valerie Overstreet Browning, who neither one of them will probably hear this, but they were my best friends from, you know, late elementary school all through junior high. And I just remember there was this unit. And before that, there was another unit of 3. There were all of these triads of friendship, because if there's only 2, you piss each other off and then the friendship's over. But you can always trade moderator, right?
Right, right. Exactly. And mediator, yeah, exactly.
So. And
that's a good point.
Yeah. And it's such a chosen family thing. I'm very into chosen family. I think a lot of homosexuals, I mean, I'll speak from that angle, find their chosen family because a lot of times their own personal family members have issues with them being homosexuals. There
right.
you go.
Yeah.
And those are the people that you come out to first. I came out to my friends before anybody. And that's saying something, because my mom knew 12 years before the rest of my family. My mom and I were tight. But yeah, my friends knew first. Your friends know first. Your friends are your family. And that's that whole thing. In this story, we start in the present day, but we quickly go back to flashback for a couple of numbers and a couple of scenes that set up this very close relationship.
And so these women are in their 30s or 40s.
They're in their mid-40s. This is a story about—
Midlife.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to say 5 years before. I think I'm going to go to 100. But yeah, mid-40s. And it's a real story about real American women. And one is lesbian. My character is a lesbian. Michelle Miller Dill, who is head of musical theater at Tulsa University. I'm so blessed to have her in the cast. She plays Annie, who is a bisexual character who's only discovered her bisexuality, or really embraced it and come out about it to herself and others, in the last 2 years. So it's a new thing for her. And then the third character, played by Shannon Boston, the children's educator at All Souls Unitarian Church here in Tulsa. Oh, and a dear friend since single digits in elementary school. She plays Claire, a straight character whose refrain of one song begins, "Condom breaks, you marry young."
Yeah.
Still, I can't imagine life without my gift of a son. You know?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
She's had her issues and struggles. And what I love about Claire's story, it seems Claire may seem like a light character, but she's the glue of everything. And she is the one who at the beginning of the story feels disconnected from her 2 sister friends, and her need is to get them back in her life. She needs those people in her life, and they all need each other, and they all find each other again in very interesting ways throughout the rest of the show.
Now, you opened the show for one night at Summer Stage.
We did a staged reading after 5 weeks from conception to staged reading. We had a 15-page outline that included the lyrics to 16 songs.
Mm-hmm.
It was improvisational scenes. Lisa Cole, who came up with the concept of the show, played Annie in the original stage reading, did a great job. And then Shannon was part of the show too. We had a very young group of musicians, and it was so very special and so crazy. We were using a combination of handheld mics and head mics, and it was much more of a Rebecca Ungerman concert with a lot of help.
Right. So after that stage reading, I mean, you obviously had a chance to look at what worked, what didn't. Have you gone back and looked at the script and sort of fleshed out some of the things you were doing?
Well, first we created a script. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I wrote a script of about 120 pages, and then Oh, I've been working with the most wonderful man whose name is Christopher O'Rourke. Chris O'Rourke is a writer himself, a playwright, a dramaturg, which I had to look that up. Expert on all things dramatical, from script writing to legalities to everything. And he's quite wonderful. He's actually meeting us in Israel to direct the show while we're there. And he's been working with us via Skype. He took my 120 pages.
And probably...
He shrunk it. He did. Yes. He did. So, you're absolutely right. He shrunk it down to more like almost half that.
Right.
We will still, after these shows in Israel, the show will change again. 5 months is not enough to write a real good and proper musical.
Hey, a musical takes years.
It does. So I feel like Pinocchio became a real boy, but the boy's about three. Mm-hmm. And I want it to be a good, healthy human, you know?
Right.
And it will be. But for now, for what we're going to be able to do in Israel, what we've been able to do in the last 5 months, I'm so proud. I'm so impressed with the talent I'm working with. Disassociating, like, I've had to really let go of some things because some of these songs are 20 years old and I've got such associations. So to change a lyric at first was, you know, oh my gosh, that's, you can't do that. Now we've completely changed things and I love it. I'm looking for more. How do we make it more authentic?
Now, if you say some of these songs are 15, 20 years old, have you been singing them in your act or have they been sitting in a shoebox waiting for the right time?
There's actually a combination of both. There's one song that has definitely, the oldest song's been in the shoebox. It was on my first cassette that I recorded at Valcor Studios with Hank Charles. That can tell you how old that is.
Yeah, you direct a cassette.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it was.
We're dating ourselves here.
Oh, so badly. So badly. But it's true. So true. And I was very proud of that back in the 90s, early 90s
when
I made
right.
that. And one song, I Just Want, which was the title of my solo album in 04, my first solo album. I Just Went was on the 92 cassette. We redid it for the 04 solo album. Now we've completely rearranged it, and it's become a solo for Michelle Dill's character. So to me, it's just that's what I love, the evolution of the work and sharing it and collaborating.
Do you think it works better now as a song as a part of a larger piece than just as a solo song?
Do you think you
actually wrote it for a show that you didn't know there was going to be?
That's a really good question, Rich. But I think that it works both ways. And I think it's had a really cool life and will continue to have a cool life. It works as a standalone just fine. What fascinates me about that particular song is I wrote it in Chicago. I call it one of the last two good songs I wrote in a certain time of my life. Because after that, I didn't write for almost a decade and thought I had lost that ability. I Just Want, I played it for somebody in Chicago. I was living in Chicago at the time, and her name is Annie Deckham Akins. I love you, Annie. She's still working cabaret singer down on the East Coast. I hope everybody out there is safe. She said that it was a really cool tune, but she just couldn't relate to it. She was too confident in her life, and she was in her early 30s and really kicking ass and taking names. Mm-hmm. And I could understand what she was saying. Now, almost 20 years later, this song has such relevance to a 40-something person. That's what's blown my mind. And the nuance that Michelle Dill has found in the song and in the character, I'm just like watching my garden grow. It's
now,
wonderful.
So what's a 25-year-old writing songs from the point of view of a 40-something person?
Well, it's funny. If you're a hipster 20-something, hipster, that's a terrible thing. But writing a lyric like, my moods are swinging like an old Anne Margaret flick, which is one of my favorite lines I've ever written. Mm-hmm. It did. It meant something when I was 20, but it means something much richer and much more in depth when you're in your 40s. Michelle's found both a lightness in it and a weight to it that I never really found when I was writing it. You know, sometimes you just write because it's a cool line or it's a rhyme.
My guest today is Rebecca Ungerman, a wonderful vocalist, theatrical producer, impresario.
That's a Jim Halsey word.
And songwriter and a musical creator.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got
all
a lot of
sudden.
Hats. Yeah. And The Unwitting Wife, which had a stage reading at Summer Stage, is now having its first production at the Tiberias International Theater Festival in Israel. Tiberias, a sister city of Tulsa. And you're going to take it on the road to Jerusalem and Tel Aviv as well while you're there.
It's a three-city tour.
I know. How did this come about?
magic. The word in Hebrew is besheret. It means fated. And from the time Cindy Vedder tapped me on the shoulder, this has been that way. I got an email within 2 weeks of that saying from the Jewish community saying, would this show be appropriate for this festival? Because, well, and the next day there, they asked me about the festival, and I talked to James Watts at the Tulsa World and said that we had been approached to apply. And then it was announced in the paper. And from that press, there was more. Yeah, I kind of spun it. My company is called Spinning Plates Productions.
Yeah.
I saw an opportunity. And it was so wonderful to see this opportunity with Tiberius, because 12 years ago, I was doing teleconferences from Carver Middle School to the partner school in Tiberius on an educational level and playing songs with them. And I get to work with those kids when we're there in Tiberius. We get to do some partnership activities. We get to share our stories and listen to theirs. And we're going to take some stuff from Carver and bring some stuff back. I love the partnership mission. We had 3 partner cities when I was working, started with them, and now there is 8.
Right.
It's amazing. Tulsa Global Alliance is phenomenal. Tulsa Jewish Federation has supported us, as well as the Oklahoma Israel Foundation. The legitimacy of this gig is kind of crazy. It's great.
Yeah, well, and you'll be closing the festival there.
Yeah, we were so pleased to see that we got the prime spot closing the festival. There are at least 5 other countries represented. It's very, very special to us. And having, again, that partnership where, you know, I'll see people there that I've met here because we have this unique relationship with Tiberius. And it's such a wonderful, beautiful place and so rich in history to take my 3 friends who have never been there. And I've been 3 times, but always as a youth director. So this is amazing.
Now, and while you're there, you're going to go ahead and do the show in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Now, that was something you created.
2 weeks before I got the tap on the shoulder, I opened something called Spinning Plates Productions to encompass everything I do, period. And Spinning Plates Productions is very proudly LGBT-owned. And I feel very strongly that this is a story that needs to be seen by LGBT audiences simply because it's an LGBT story, period. I remember Bridget Loves Bernie, which was a very tiny sitcom back in the 70s.
I remember that with Meredith Baxter Bernie
and David Bernie. Right. I was
They
6.
Found true love on the set.
They did. And it was a story of a Jew and a non-Jew.
Yeah,
and I was
Catholic,
6 or 7. Yes. And it made such a huge impact because it's the first time I ever saw a Jew in the media that was just a normal person, that wasn't a stereotype. That's what I'm trying to do. Just on the press of this show, I've had people...
For gay, lesbian...
Yes, just to see an image of themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's
so impactful. And to see a positive story, not a whitewashed stereotype either, but a real story with depth. And yes, so these Jerusalem and Tel Aviv shows, I just reached out to the communities, the LGBT communities, the Jewish communities, the theatrical communities... And I've got some friends and contacts. They have friends and contacts, and everything has been happening like crazy wonderfulness. It's just – it's fantastic.
Let's hear a little bit of music from the show. And there's one song that sort of sums up what you've been talking about, and it's towards the end of the show, and it's a piece called Never Gonna Be a Bride. Tell us about the beginning of this song and how it's come to be in the show.
This is definitely one of the ones I wrote for the show. I call it the political number because as topical as the show is, I wanted to make sure it wasn't too political because, God willing, the laws will change and we'll have marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the line, it's not just mere frustration, it's federal legislation. You might as well face it as if I'm never going to be a bride. And it's a very zippy number. You can tap your toes to it, but by the end of it, you see the anger in the character. It's wonderful for me to perform as an actor. And by golly, Rich, you know, I grew up a Jewish lesbian in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's a little frustrating sometimes. But I do believe in changing things from within. And, you know, I always get that, the most hated question, why are you still here in Tulsa? Because things are happening. It's home. It's home. That's A number one. Home, family, everything. But I've seen, you know, I love saying I was on that first school bus, yellow school bus from south side to north side in the magnet schools, kindergarten to 12th grade, first class. I was taught not to see color. And now all I can see is this divided city that we still live in. Maybe by showing these stories of people who are fringe now, because we are still fringe. Anybody mm-hmm. who's pushed to the side is fringe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, my father and mother have given me a great political legacy.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the song. This is from the show, The Unwitting Wife, Never Gonna Be a Bride.
In my favorite Mel Brooks movie, Madeline Kahn, she sang it best. When that late great comic genius warbled that she needed rest. Now you may not think I mean it, I could not be more sincere. But in case you need the point driven home, my dear, I'm dead, dead as a doornail inside. I'm done, stick a fork in me, 'cause I'm done risking my pride. It's not just mere frustration, it's federal legislation. You might as well face it, as have I. I'm never, never gonna be a bride. I am flat.
That's music from The Unwitting Wife, Never Gonna Be a Bride. One of the numbers from the piece by Rebecca Ungerman, my guest today, who is taking this piece out to Israel on a mini tour. And I guess with your dramaturge director, this will be a exploration of how this show goes over in front of an audience. And then from that, I imagine you'll be doing rewrites and things like that. So this is part of a process. I mean, it's sort of a big process, you know, leaving Tulsa, Oklahoma, going to Israel to workshop this on a stage. But that's kind of a different way of doing it, I suppose.
You know, nothing about this process has happened the way, quote unquote, it should. I would never choose this. I think everyone involved in the process has snapped at each other at one time or another, because the time frame has been insane. Mm-hmm. However, what you're saying is absolutely correct. And we're already talking about what needs to change after Israel, but we don't have time to change now. Like, there's a resolve at the end that is still a little too easy. Of course, in the staged reading, the resolve happened with magic, real magic, with gold glitter. And one of the characters turned into a fairy kind of at the end. It was the worst 11th hour introduction of crap. I mean, it was terrible. But now it's handled much more tastefully with no magic, but a drinking game that's really fun.
Uh-huh.
But it still needs work. It still needs smoothing. I cut a number that was in the staged reading. I wrote an opening number that was never in the staged reading. I could see making major changes to come. But we have done a cast recording. I loved getting this in the box, partly out of necessity. We did the cast recording so we could strip the vocals and use those tracks in Israel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We had to. There was no way to do it any other way. And that was disappointing at first, but has become quite a blessing in the rehearsal process, because you know, everyone has these things called jobs and lives and families, and they can't rehearse with me 24/7 like I want them to.
Well, you've been very much a solo performer, and it's about your way. When you get into the theatrical experience, it's about collaboration. How's that been for you? I mean, you know, hearing somebody say, you know, this just doesn't work. And it's like, you know, you put your heart and soul into it. You know, there's a different mentality in the theater.
I crave collaboration, and people are surprised by that, I think. I definitely am an artist. I have very strong visions, but I never once have thought that my vision is solely and alone the best. That's part of what I get from the youth work, the collaboration of a community. And when you're working with so many people, it's fantastic. So probably the thing that we've really had to get rid of, and it's, I think when you start any social setting, you have to get rid of the preamble, the, now, you know, I'm not trying to bruise your ego, and you know, I don't, blah, blah, blah. And it's, so we've stopped a lot of that, and we're just working.
Now, you mentioned the ending, it's not where you want it to be. I mean.
Not perfectly. Sort of, yeah.
There's, not perfectly.
There's stuff to tweak.
So you're going to go show it in front of an audience. What if the audience likes it?
I have no doubt the audience will like it, actually.
But
they'll like it more when I fix it, right? When we fix it. You know, this has been such a wonderful evolution, and I just can't imagine that it's all grown at the end of 6 months.
Yeah. You know?
So
what are you going to learn from the audience, seeing the audience see the piece the way, pretty much the way you envisioned it, at least at this point?
It's so crucial. Like, when I put up any kind of show, I do a dress rehearsal, invitational dress, just to hear. I look for the unexpected laughs, and there's always the what I expect will be a laugh line or a tear line, and it doesn't happen. For me as an actor, I'm going to be making sure that every performance is filmed, because I know if it's being filmed, I can disassociate from that. As a cabaret performer and a club singer, I'm constantly watching the audience to tweak my performance to attune to them. As a performer, I've really had to jet it down and really concentrate on acting and not being so yakka yakka performer, right? Because I'm a vaudevillian by heart.
Right.
So the audiences, they tell us – yeah, they do. They tell us what works and what doesn't. And I want to do – especially with the Jerusalem and Tel Aviv shows, we'll do Q&As afterwards with the audience so they can ask the cast and ask us anything and tell us what they like.
And I would think that would be interesting, because you're doing the Jerusalem and Tel Aviv shows for basically gay audiences for the most part.
That's where we're targeting our marketing, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, whereas the Tiberius is, you know, it's going to be a, you know, everybody. And I would be interested to see what sort of different reactions you get from that. I imagine you are interested in that too.
Absolutely. These are theatrical professionals from all around the world. And yet, it's a new festival. I don't know if it's officially what they call a fringe festival, but it's a new festival. This is kind of groundbreaking stuff. So, it, you know, if I think about it too closely, I'll be too scared to go, right? But there's an element of that kind of Wild West newness among all the companies, and we're all there together. You know, me and the Belgians, I don't think either one of us can read the 5-page brochure that's in Hebrew. So we'll bond together during that time.
Well, we look forward to what happens. And we should also mention you are getting a little support from the Sister Cities program and from Tiberius itself, but you're raising a vast majority of this this money.
Oh, about 7/8 of the budget. Yeah, yeah. But the community has been wonderful. Private donations. I've gotten support from dear friends, former youth group kids. Just it's been fantastic. And the best thing is this whole wonderful Monty Python animated Foot of the Unwitting Wife plopped down in the middle of my life 2 weeks after I opened my company. And I haven't had any time to focus on that. So when I come home from Israel, I'm thinking about so many wonderful things about here in Tulsa, but I've also got to be able to pay the rent and eat and all that stuff. So people ask me when I'm going to be done fundraising. I'm really kind of not for a while. but that's coming too. It is a high compliment that you have seen my career kind of blossom in the last year, because it's been a focused endeavor. It's working, and I have no doubt that – you know, this last year was about accolades and work. The next year, hopefully, will also bring money.
All right.
Not so worried.
Rebecca Ackerman, we wish you great success. Hope, you know, break a leg in Israel, you know.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for joining us. Singer, songwriter, and musical performer Rebecca Ackerman speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her musical, The Unwitting Wife, makes its premiere Thursday at the Tiberius International Theater Festival in Israel. To learn more, visit her website at RebeccaUngerman.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.